Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Locked On Pirates, the Daily Pirates podcast choice. My name is Jason Rolison, and in addition to this podcast, you can also find my words on the pages of piratesbreakdown.com, where my team and I strive to provide quality Pirates insight and analysis. We're also especially proud to tell you about Pirates Guide 2018, the definitive field guide to the 2018 Pittsburgh Pirates. It's available on Amazon in ebook and paperback editions, available on March 5th, so please visit piratesguidebook.com for more information on that. Okay, so we are a couple days removed from the big bombshell acquisition of Corey Dickerson. Last week, the Pirates acquired him late in the week for Daniel Hudson, a prospect, and some cash. And we've talked a lot about him, but we're also going to talk today about another minor acquisition the Pirates made, and that is acquiring yet another lefty bullpen option in Kevin Segrist. Now, I'm sure that I don't have to tell Pirates fans about Kevin Segrist. Kevin Segrist broke into the league after being drafted in round 41 of the 2008 June amateur draft. Just goes to show you that you never know when you're going to find a quality player. And he was a very good bullpen arm for, you know, quite a few years there with the St. Louis Cardinals starting in 2013. For his career, he has made 276 appearances, totaling 245.2 innings. And he has an xFIP of 3.99 during that time, so, you know, quite a middle-of-the-road bullpen arm, but can do a lot of different things. Like I said, tore up the Pirates quite often as part of the Cardinals for a few years. Got hurt in 2017. That led to a DFA from the Cardinals. The Phillies picked him up and didn't really make many appearances for the Phillies, only seven of them in 2017, but he showed that he could still get the ball over the plate, and the Pirates are going to take yet another flyer on another left-handed reliever. Who would have thunk it? What I think is different about Segrist, though, is that he has a different pitch selection that you see in a late-inning reliever. And by that, I mean he actually throws a curveball and a changeup, if you can believe it. In 2016, we'll use his most recent full year as a good barometer. He used the four-seam fastball 67.6% of the time, mixed in a curve at 10.77%, but actually threw a changeup 21.44% of the time. That is quite a lot for a late-inning reliever. I was just looking it up the other day, and the Pirates last year, for reference, their entire bullpen threw, I think, about 5.4% changeups all year. So you don't really see this much, and I think that may give him a little bit of a leg up, you know, depending on if the velocity is there. That little bit of a different look might give him the advantage over guys like Jack Leathersich and Josh Smoker, more other left-handed options that are vying for a spot in the very crowded Pirates bullpen. You know, the velocity was not quite there in 2017, as you can imagine. 92.59 miles per hour average on the four-seam. And the changeup, you know, while I'm encouraged about its usage, there wasn't much separation there, only 85.38 miles per hour on the changeup, so we're only talking about a 7-mile-per-hour difference on between the four-seam and the change, so you wonder how much that'll play, especially if his four-seam velocity is going to drop even more. But, you know, who are we to judge, because the changeup does have a 15.83 whiff percentage in 2017 alone. That's been the case throughout his career, 15.68 in 2015. So they can he can definitely generate some swings and misses on the changeup. So I think as long as the velocity is there reasonably, you know, maybe he may even gain back a mile per hour or two, and maybe Ray Searidge and Justin Message can work and kind of teach him to lower that changeup velocity just a little bit to create a little more separation. You know, I think the Pirates might have something here. And if they don't, they don't. It was a lottery ticket to begin with. It's a minor league deal with an invitation to spring training, so it's really a no-lose situation for the Pirates, and if they can stash another bullpen arm at AAA, if worst-case scenario, let him build up some innings, let him show that he gets back to what he was before the injury, maybe we'll have another conversation then. So it's a very low-risk move by the Pirates, and hey, another left-hander, let's throw them all against the wall and see who sticks. Okay, so before we move on here at Locked On Pirates, I want to tell you, if you're a business owner or a decision-maker to business, there is a really good chance you're going to want to advertise on Locked On Pirates. Like I said at the top, Locked On Pirates is a daily Pittsburgh Pirates podcast, once the season gets started, of course. And just on that fact alone, your business is going to get into a lot of ears. It's going to get into a lot of ears, one way or another. And just that fact alone is going to bring so much ROI for you. So if you're interested, and our rates are very reasonable, by the way, please email me, Jason, lockedonpirates@gmail.com. I'll be happy to talk to you, put you in touch with the right people. All right, so next on the podcast, we're going to open up the mailbag. You know, when we first started talking about Locked On Pirates, we realized we really want to get our listeners involved as much as possible. And this is just one way. So what I did was I put out a call out on Twitter for questions and Facebook. And for the Twitter followers here, you can follow us at Locked On Pirates or follow me at PBC Breakdown. I said, here's how we're going to do it. We're going to put out a call for mailbag questions. If you submit it, I will pay you a compliment based entirely on your Twitter profile. And then I'll answer your question. And then you'll be entered into a drawing for a free copy of Pirates Guide 2018. So let's get right to the questions. First question comes from Eddie Shack at, I'm going to hope I get this right, RIBRIBlack1Rob. Okay. I'm looking at his Twitter profile and it says friend of collies and his picture is a collie. So that was a very nice refresher today on a Monday to see a collie and see someone who loves collies. So good on you, Rob. Or Eddie. I'm not quite sure what you go by. Question is, do you believe Tyler Glasnow will end up in the bullpen? Well, Eddie/Black Rob, I really think he does. I think, and I thought originally that when Daniel Hudson was shipped to the Rays, this really opened up a spot for Glasnow. Otherwise, it might have been a little bit hard to shoehorn him in there somewhere, but I think that makes it ever more clear. And if you believe the report that Rob Beerenthal put out on The Athletic earlier this week, he had gone on to say that Glasnow will serve as a swingman. I haven't quite heard that from Clint Hurdle or anybody else just yet. Of course, Rob is a pro. He's a great guy, and you should really subscribe to The Athletic, by the way. It's great value. You get all the national baseball writers as well as Rob. So there's really no reason to say the report is wrong. That's exactly what I was saying at all, but I just want to hear a little more confirmation, but it's certainly all signs seem to point that way, and I really think that's the right call. Obviously, I think everyone can agree that putting him into AAA just to eat innings and dominate more bats is very counterproductive. That's really not going to help anybody at all. But one thing I will say is that putting him in the bullpen as a swingman or a longman is also, in my opinion, not going to be very productive. You're going to have a guy who's going to try and stay on a somewhat of a starter routine with side sessions and try to keep him long, you know, in anticipation of a spot start here and there. You have a weapon. What good is that going to do if you don't use it? You don't want to leave your bullets in this holster, so... You know, I wouldn't be surprised if that changed, and you know, maybe this year with all the focus on the bullpen that Cleo Huntington's put in, maybe this is the year that Clint Hurdle will go towards bullpenning. If he does that, I think you can be very excited about Glasnow in the bullpen, I really do. Alright, our next question comes from at Viva Hard Duck, and he is listed on Twitter as Leangelo Misterioso. I'm looking at his account right now, and he has a nice picture of what seems to be a homicidal classical musician with one of the powder wigs and blood all over his face. That's at least very interesting. I think we can all agree on that, right? His question is kind of an open and shut one, so we'll breeze right through it. Have the Pirates shown any interest in Alex Cobb? No, they have not. This Pirates rotation is set the way it is, and you should feel very comfortable with that. You have Drew Jameson Taillon coming into his own. Now will be in his third, technically his third year, but who knows if you want to call it his first full year, his second year, he has had so many starts and stops to his career. But let's just say, you know, after a boring offseason, this will be his first season where he just hits it and runs with it. You have Ivan Nova, who's going to eat innings for you at the very least, and by all counts has shown up to camp lean, mean, and ready to lead. Trevor Williams took a huge step last year. Chad Cole rounded into form after he added his curveball. And then you have that fifth spot, which we think is going to go to Joe Musgrove, and I think you should be excited about it as well. Musgrove has a unique selection of pitches, including a very unique one-seam sinker. If you want to read more about that, I would just do a Google search for Eno Saris on Fangraphs and search for Musgrove sinker. And I think Musgrove is ready to really attack his next opportunity. So I think there's a lot to be excited about this Pirates rotation. And then maybe later in the year, in September, you might see Mitch Keller. You'll see Clay Holmes, Tyler Epler, and Nick Kingham at some points this year, most likely. So... You know, I really think there's no need for the Pirates to really get in on any last-minute free agent starting pitcher. Our next question comes from at Penns Steel Bucks. Pittsburgh Sports is their name. Beautiful picture of the river right by PNC Park and two bridges framed very nicely. Very good shot. He asks, I don't care what Bob Nunning says. Do the Pirates' actions show that they are rebuilding or trying to compete? If you had asked this question before the Corey Dickerson signing, my answer might be different. But right now, my answer is a resounding yes. They're doing what they always do. They look for little cracks in the system, market inefficiencies, players other teams have forgotten, i.e. all these left-handed bullpen arms. They got a glut of pieces in the Gerrit Cole trade. Not so much in the Andrew McCutchen trade, but these are quality pieces as well. So I really think that with the addition of Dickerson now, I think the Pirates are competing while allowing themselves for some flexibility. Let's not forget that Dickerson is under arb control for the next 2 years, this year and next. So the Pirates can flip a piece for him if they think Austin Meadows is more ready than he is shown to this point. Or they can keep him for another year and really don't rush and really not rush Meadows at all. So that fact alone, coupled with the smart moves they made for the bullpen, really make me think that they are thinking they can compete in 2018 and beyond. Next question comes from Matthew at 1MATJES and 1@1MATJES. Let's take a look at his Twitter profile. He's from Bavaria. How very interesting. But Munich to be exact, isn't it, in Germany? Anyway, his profile says, let's see how good I do here. Gegen Brauen Dreck, wer mich unergraft und listen setzt, sofortiger in unterwertiger Block. My handy-dandy Google Translate tells me that translates to against brown dirt, who puts me unsolicited on lists, immediate and irrefutable block. Kudos for you for using irrefutable. I think that's an amazing word. Needs used much more frequently in American literature and culture. And he asks, what exactly is the problem with Glasnow? Well, he can't quite find the strike zone with regularity. I think we should start there. He had a pretty good two innings of work in his first spring action the other day. Racked up a couple strikeouts, did get taken for a ride, and also hit a batter, but no walks. So that's a very good start in Tyler Glasnow's world. I just think that, you know, he has this swing and miss curveball that's supposed to be so great, but it all has to be set up by the fastball and location, location, location. There's so much talk about his third pitch. His second pitch cannot play unless his four-seam does as well. And so far, we simply have not seen that. So maybe with his new delivery he started tinkering with last year, followed by just a year of gaining confidence working with the Pirates pitching coaches, you know, maybe we'll see a different side. And I think Justin Message being promoted to the major league as assistant pitching coach says a lot. I think much has been reported about Message and his relationship with Glasnow. Message was the pitching coach at Single-A Advanced, West Virginia Power, at Double-A Altoona, where Glasnow really started to come into his own as a prospect. So I think that fact alone could really bode well for him, whether it be in the bullpen or the starting rotation, like I said earlier. So, but if you can find the strike zone with like his first pitch, second pitch, you know, get to a head in the count a little earlier in the at-bat, I think he'll be much better than you've seen to this point. All right, so we're going to move to the Facebook portion of this week's mailbag. And the first question comes from Howie Dittman, who writes, Moran, Colin Moran, seemed to be trending up last season. Dickerson ended his season on a low. What do you see about Moran that suggests he'll continue to build on that? And what do you see, what indicators are there that Dickerson will turn him back around? Okay, so let's start with the Dickerson part of that first. The number one indicator I saw between his second half, where he really slumped in the first half, where he excelled, was that he actually made less soft contact in the second half. First half soft contact rate was 20.7% as per Fangraphs. Second half contact rate, soft contact rate, was 15.7. So that tells me that he, you know, made less soft contact, which is always a great thing. You don't want someone coming up in the second half of the season being fatigued, having already gone through half a season, all-star break, all-star festivities, everything around that for the first time all-star. I'm going to check that right now. But the point stands that you don't want to see someone fatigued to the point where they're just getting up there and making soft contact at bat after at bat. So that was the first indicator I saw that it could have been like a fluke or something like that. And yes, Dickerson was the first time all-star last year. Some other indicators that I happened to notice when I took a quick lap. I'm looking at his plate discipline, peripherals mostly, just to kind of get an idea, because Dickerson is always going to have a reputation as a free swinger. There's just no question about that. But in the second half last year, some of the peripherals actually stay the same. Mainly, his swing rate stayed pretty much the same, and that was, let's see here. Okay. In the first half, his swing rate was 58.8. In the second half, 58.7. His Z swing, which is the zone swing rate, was 77.4 in the first half, 80% in the second half. And that's fine in that regard, because you want to see someone who can do as much damage as Dickerson can to take swings that are in the zone. where you see the kind of drop-off was purely in his swinging strike rate. In the first half, he was a 14.5% swinger in terms of swinging and missing, and he rose to 16.6% in the second half. Does not seem like as much of a jump as you would think. It's only 2-point-something percent after all, right? But that can change the complexity of an at-bat. So I think if Dickerson can get back to just being a selectively free swinger, if that makes any sense, you know, kind of take your swings at the pitches they can do something with, and if you do something with it, great. If not, you know, maybe you'll end up with a double or a single instead of driving out of the ballpark. The other part of Howie's question was about Colin Moran. I think for my money, there is not a player with, you know, there's, Moran's got quite a lot of pressure on his shoulder, maybe not the most pressure of any Pirates player, but he was a very big centerpiece in the Gerrit Cole trade. He's also going to be replacing Young Ho Gong, who, believe it or not, some fans still hold a candle for to this day. So he's got a lot of pressure on his shoulders, and he's embraced the launch angle revolution. He knows who he is as a hitter. He's a pull hitter, which will play at PNC Park. So it's just too early to say Moran will be able to keep it up because he has all of, I think, 45 major league at-bats to this point. So if you ask me this question again the first half of the season, you know, maybe I'll be able to answer more intelligently. But right now, I think the adjustments he made in the minor leagues also will play on the major league level, just basically based on how what kind of adjustments they are. It's kind of an approach adjustment, so as long as he can take that approach to major league pitchers, I think he'll be a pretty quality major leaguer for years to come. Ron James in Facebook asks, does Bryce Brentz have an advantage making the roster over guys like Luplo and Osuna, being he's out of options and could be lost if the Pirates don't keep him? Yes, absolutely. But only to a certain degree. Luplo and Osuna that you mentioned there are guys that the Pirates know. They know like the back of their hand. They know backwards and forwards. They've developed them to this point. So I think the Bryce Brentz represents a little bit of the unknown. So let's say that towards the end of spring training, there's really nothing that either have done or either of those three have done to really distinguish themselves. If that's the case, I really think that the Pirates may go with what they're familiar with, and that being Luplo and Osuna, especially if Osuna can be serviceable at third. We can't forget that. With that being said, it sure is awfully tempting to think about Bryce Brentz and Corey Dickerson exchanging starts in left field. That's a natural right-left platoon. Both have power. So I think that might play to it as well, but all things being equal, the Pirates will go with what they're comfortable with, not the great unknown. Let's see here. We have one last question from Tony Cunningham. Kind of a really good one, so it's let's get right into it. Your predictions of team MVP, best pitcher, and best position player, who do you think will underperform and disappoint? That's a tough question as we sit on February 26th, just a couple of spring training games under our belt. For my money, I think Corey Dickerson will be the players, would be the position player MVP. I think his stats are pretty regression-proof. Yes, he may have some fluctuations here and there. He may hit a couple of three-week stretches where he's not putting the ball out of play as a home run, but I really think the Pirates really did a great job in bringing him into PNC Park, and that left-handed power will play. So I think as long as he can do what he's shown he's been able to do, he will win a team MVP in a close race over Josh Bell. Nothing against Josh Bell. I think Josh Bell's going to have a fantastic year, another stepping stone year. I think with Dickerson, I'm really looking for WRC plus run creation of 125 or above. I really am. For the pitcher, I'm going to surprise a few people, and I'm going to go with Joe Musgrove. I think getting a fresh start after, you know, the tribulations he went through last year with the world champion Houston Astros kind of will reinvigorate him, and I think that unique sinker is going to really play. I think the Pirates, you know, probably thought of that as a shiny new toy when they got him. And they're going to really take the leashes off him and really see what he can do. As far as underperforming or disappointing, I'm not really particularly fond of Francisco Cervelli right now as this team's starting catcher. I'm hoping that he can really provide value with his pitch framing, putting that thumb injury behind him. But other than that, you know, I think he's just kind of I wouldn't call him quite a black hole in the lineup, but I think this lineup could really stretch with a slightly better hitter at the catching position. That's just my personal opinion. So we'll see how that goes. Cervelli, if he can play great defense, this team will absolutely take that from the catching position every single day of the week. Well, I think that wraps it up for today's Locked On Pirates. I want to encourage you to please subscribe to our show in iTunes, and while you're there, please rate and review and tell a friend. That's easily the best way for us to gain readership, listenership, and you know, please follow us on Twitter at Locked On Pirates and find us on the web at LockedOnPirates.com. And this is Jason, and I'll talk to you next time.